kwakuwankwamnyako nauvuku naundukufu ata milele.
Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe. Jambo, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Radio Harambe, the companion podcast to our website, jamboeveryone.com. I am Dave McBride, broadcasting from the Radio Harambe studios. Joining me from somewhere in the world is a man who just may be suffering from a touch of the Disney frostbite. It's Safari Mike. Mike, how are you?
Jambo, Dave. I am in Orano Mafana National Park.
That's got to be African.
Very good. Can you be more specific or no?
Orano Mafana. South Africa.
Close enough. It's Madagascar.
That's right off the coast. Might as well give credit. Yeah.
We're here looking at the greater bamboo lemur. It's sort of the giant panda of Madagascar. It eats exclusively bamboo, which because of that and habitat destruction has made it incredibly endangered. It's one of the 25 most endangered primates in the world.
And Madagascar, correct me if I'm wrong, is like the home of lemurs.
That's the only place you'll find them. Yep.
And there's dozens of different species.
Correct. There are numerous, and they all fit all different niches in the wild.
And it has to do with the fact that it evolved on an island separated from Africa, and they're really, you know, kind of a different evolution of the primates, correct?
Correct. It broke off. Not unlike Australia in many ways. Madagascar has many indigenous species, not just lemurs, that's probably the most famous, but all sorts of other mammals and reptiles and things of that, like that.
I was listening to, of all things today, a soccer podcast, it's like a roundtable thing, six or seven different reporters from all over the world. Two guys were talking about how Madagascar is their absolute favorite place in the world. I think it is the most incredibly beautiful and amazing place they've ever been to. sales pitch for it.
Yeah, well, it's also dirt poor, which causes a lot of problems.
And occasionally has civil wars, if I'm not mistaken.
But, not in a while, but yeah.
Yeah. You don't want that to break out while you're trying to vacation.
No.
On today's show, we're going to discuss all the news from Disney's Animal Kingdom and the rest of Walt Disney World. Then in our final segment, we will give you an in-depth review of the soon-to-be-extinct Sunrise Safari Tour. But before we do that, let's get into the news. Mike, this coming Tuesday, the Animal Kingdom will have another of its animal-specific celebration day things where they celebrate elephant and rhinos on September 23rd. I believe September 22nd is actually World Rhino Day, and usually they kind of tie it in somehow here. Like all these events, most of the activities will take place out in the conservation station. I'll just read you what the Disney Parks blog says. Education cast members will staff hands-on activities. The work of the Animal Nutrition Center will be highlighted. Animal keepers from the elephant, savanna, and Ituri forest teams will be present to share information and answer questions related to the animal care profession. Guests will also have the opportunity to speak with representatives from various conservation organizations, including the DWCF, to learn more about opportunities to get involved. We always mention these little events. They're great little events, but they're nothing more than little events. However, I've always wanted Mike to be there with a recorder and try to interview one of these.
Go down there.
One of these, what do they call them? Animal care specialists.
Sure, go down there.
Yeah, well, I don't think I'm gonna. It's next week.
That's all right.
We need to live closer. Speaking of the DWCF, the Disney's Worldwide Conservation Fund, which is what that stands for, every year grants funding to dozens of conservation groups all over the world. And the money that's basically raised through various purchases, including the little buttons that you see in all the gift shops, the Animal Kingdom, the Animal Kingdom Lodge, plus things like tours and stuff like that. And then they match a portion of it, and then they send it off to all these different organizations. In fact, they awarded 141 grants to over 100 different conservation groups. Included in that is a couple of our conservation partners, Save the Rhino, the Cheetah Conservation Fund, and Grevy's Zebra Trust all receive some Disney dollars. If you want to send them your own Disney dollars, we invite you to go to our conservation page at JohnBlowEveryone.com and see how we can all help there. This is, I can always get on my high horse whenever we talk about the DWCF. It is one of the reasons why I love this park, and it is the only park that actually does do this with some of the money they raise.
That's true, but you see them in resorts now a lot, too.
Yeah.
Like, for some reason, we were staying at the French Quarter. I could have gotten a Disney Wildlife Conservation Fund button that had Port Orleans French Quarter written on it, which I thought was kind of cool.
I think it's a great idea, and I think they should start to jazz up the buttons a little bit more. I think the DWCF should be making some different kind of things and really use the pin trading and that kind of stuff to raise some more money. I've been saying that for ages. But for one reason or another, they don't want to compete with the merchandise folks, I guess.
Well, they can't do too much because it's only $1.
Yeah,
right. To get a button. But, yeah, I agree with you.
You can do a series of all characters on the
right, and charge them pin, but a portion of it goes to Disney Wildlife Conservation. It makes sense to me.
Sure, sure, sure. But they I'm sure they'll eventually get around to something like that, but they haven't done it so far. They do portions of the Wild Africa Trek, I know, the Backstage Safari, things like that. They don't tell you what the portions are, but some of what you're paying for that does go to the DWCF as well. And then they are sort of obligated by their charter to match some of that funds. The Disney Corporation matches some of those funds. So sent out something like $25 million or something like that. It's not an insignificant amount. And even, $50,000 for a group on the ground in, Botswana somewhere is a fortune.
Right.
And can go a long, long way. So that is that one. Mike, did you hear about the fire at BOMA?
Oh, yes, I did. I heard about it, yes.
Guests dining at the popular buffet BOMA in the Animal Kingdom Lodge forced to evacuate Monday night due to what was described as a small fire in a storage facility, the storage room, and maybe somehow related to paint. Somehow near a paint can. I don't want to be around a paint can when it goes, but neither here nor there. From what we understand, the diners were able to return about a little bit more than an hour later. I don't think any injuries were reported, simply because Mike wasn't there trying to stuff all the pork shoulder and Durban chicken into his pants as on his way out.
You made that same joke on our blog.
Hey, you got to repeat these things.
It's not even all that funny because I'm not really a big pork shoulder fan or Durban chicken. I like some of the other stuff better.
Yeah, I was going to say Zebra Domes, but I know you're not a Zebra Dome fan.
I'm also not a Zebra Dome fan either. I usually don't get those. I like the soups and the salads and the fufu. You should have said fufu.
Fufu. That would have been much funnier.
You blew your chance.
Pocket full of fufu. I could just see a mass hysteria of people running out the door and somebody grabbing the tray of Zebra Domes, running out the door with it. But it doesn't seem to have done any damage or anything like that, and it was open not long later. But there's an inhalation issue with paint, so.
Yeah, it was pandemonium on Twitter for a little while. People were saying the whole building was being evacuated, but I really wasn't all that. It was kind of much to do about nothing.
Another reason I don't much read Twitter. Let's see. What is next? We've got a couple of construction kind of updates, things we've talked about before, but maybe just a little bit more information to them. It looks as though the Tree of Life, the construction we've seen on the Tree of Life is now we're kind of getting an idea of what's going on. We reported that It's Tough to Be a Bug had its closure sort of extended a little bit. We still don't know what that's all about, but we do know that part of that was that they're putting essentially a new coat of paint and really kind of cleaning and sprucing up the Tree of Life. It's an incredible icon, and I can only imagine it gets a lot of sun exposure to the point where it's kind of need of coat of paint now and again. So that's what we're hearing so far. You're hearing the same thing, right?
Correct. Yeah, not much to add to that now.
Anything on the It's Tough to Be a Bug, why that was extended yet? We still don't know any specifics, correct?
Still don't know. They haven't really specifics. I mean, you hear rumors that they're trying to fix Hopper and, all that kind of stuff. But
right.
But we'll see. But other than that, no. Nothing concrete for sure.
And my last news story on a light day here is that, again, Mike and I talked about the last couple of times, I think, we've talked about the construction happening along Dinoland, along the water at Dinoland in Asia for what was the Rivers of Light viewing area. People are now getting a much better look at the scope of this of what's being built here. We're getting a lot of pictures. Many of the news sites are posting tons and tons of pictures about it. People were speculating a little bit about what might exactly be coming here. I can confirm as best as I can that in fact there will be seats. That there is what Disney is telling cast members a seating area. I'm putting that in air quotes.
Right.
So what some people were thinking that it was just going to be sort of an amphitheater standing area, like I guess you have in Disneyland. But I think California Adventure is one they were talking about. But it looks like we're getting actual seats. We don't know how many or whether or not these entire structures are going to be seats or what's going on here. I don't think, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think what they're building looks big enough to completely fill them with seats and to say, well, that's our viewing area for the show.
Yeah, no, you know, I'm leaning towards more of this might be, you know, the Fast Pass Plus section, or maybe even more likely, you know, the dessert party section. I mean, one of the things they're doing, for example, now at the Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party, we talked about this a little bit, either last episode or the one about before that, the villain soiree. One of the things they guarantee you is, you know, prime spot for the parade and the fireworks, and that includes seats. So, you know, maybe you'll see something along those lines, like some sort of premium ticket event, which, as we both know, Disney is a big fan of these days.
Yeah. Can't imagine them going away anytime soon, and I'm sure the Rivers of Light's going to have one of them pretty quickly after it begins.
Yeah, well, Illumination says dessert party, so does Wishes all the time. I mean, I suspect there'll be a lot of that stuff. So I suspect that, I don't know this by any stretch, but I'm just guessing at this point, but it seems logical that if they're going to build a small grouping of seats, that's what it'll be for.
Yeah, it's going to be for either one of those two things. We haven't actually seen seats go in, and it's still kind of, I mean, it's being built exactly where we thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it does look like, just from, it's hard to tell scale in these things, but it does look like the side on Dinoland is a little bit larger than where Asia is, which is good because the Dinoland kind of has basically, you can do whatever you want over there. There's no, you know, there's no view of the water from Dinoland. There's no, you know, you're not interrupting any kind of sight lines or anything like that. Only in Asia are you really doing that. My guess is that this whole show, you know, may be sort of geared towards that side of the park. I don't know how it's going to, you know, you're going to be able to see these things, but if it's just going to be, you can see it from anywhere, but like Illuminations or something like that. But if there, it does appear as though that's going to be the focus of where they're putting guest spaces. I want to make another side note, which is there's walls everywhere. I mean, we thought there were a lot of walls before. There are literally walls everywhere now. The only good thing is that they've made some of the walls kind of cool. I mean, they have like, you know, some different paintings and things like that. It's not,
yeah, especially in Asia. Yeah.
Yeah. They're not, it's not just entirely a wall. And I think that I even saw one spot where they were making it look like, forest, kind of matching the foliage behind it. The plant life behind it. You've seen those.
Yeah. Yeah. They're pretty cool, but still walls. Yeah. They're still walls.
Well, I guess that's it for the local news. We're going to take a very short break because I have a feeling we're going to have something to discuss in the world news. We'll be back in just a second on Radio Harambe.
Come on, gang. Let's take it home.
If you're like me, you're an Animal Kingdom fan who is just a bit tired of listening to so-called Disney experts who criticize our beloved park for being a, quote, half-day park. Well, it's time to put your frustrations into action by going to the Jumbo Everyone store at Zazzle.com/JumboEveryone and picking up one of our exclusive new Not a Half Day Park t-shirts. They look great, and we will donate 50% of the profits to our conservation partners. The rest of it will go to helping keep Radio Harambe on the air and JumboEveryone.com on the web. Wear it the next time you visit the parks, or even better, the next time you attend a Disney fan meetup. Go to Zazzle.com/JumboEveryone today and wear your Animal Kingdom pride for all to see. welcome back to Radio Harambe. It is time for the world news, and with that, Safari Mike. Mike, what could be going on in the world this week?
Well, Dave, at one point we'll get to a little Scandinavian country, but first Okay. Let's talk about what everybody in the Disney community is talking about now, and that is the new allergy-friendly menus that are being distributed at various locations. They are found at the Flying Fish. They are found in Hollywood Studios, at the ABC Commissary Sci-Fi Dine-In Theater, the Hollywood Brown Derby. They're at the World Premiere Food Court at Disney's All-Star Movies Resort. And they're at Kona Cafe and Captain Cook's at the Disney Walled Polynesian Village. It's now the Polynesian Village Resort. I don't know if you saw that.
Yes. Yeah.
So what they're doing is they're testing menus that they can hand to people with certain allergies. I know they have a gluten-free one, and I believe they have, you know, other like major allergies. I suppose if you're allergic to mangoes, they might not have a specific menu just for that. But for gluten-free and I guess dairy and peanuts and that kind of thing, you will get a special menu. So instead of necessarily a chef coming out to talk to you, and talk to you about, you know, what they can do and what you can have if you're gluten-free, for example, they actually have a menu. And actually, the menu is relatively impressive. I thought for sure that this was going to be a situation where these restaurants, they would have the same menu.
I was just going to ask. You're saying menu. Is it just one menu for all the restaurants?
No. So the Kona Cafe one, for example, has, like I'm looking at, if you go on, you know, our friend Sarah's website, gluten-free, dairy-free at WDW, Right. She has a couple of the menus up there. And one of them, like, for example, the Kona one, there are five different appetizers, all obviously Kona-specific, a Kona salad, a Maui onion and white bean soup, and like some rolls, and like some sushi stuff. And then they have seven different entrees, including things such as sesame seared scallops with rice, et cetera, et cetera. A version of their pan Asian noodles.
Oh, nice.
So they really went out of their way here, I think. And part of it is, and there's also a few desserts too. Part of it obviously is, you know, I think the chefs, it occupies some of their time for them to come out, talk to you.
Sure.
You know, deal with it. And from what I understand, it's not something that they come running out as soon as they say, by the way, you know, I'm gluten-free. And 5 seconds later, a chef comes out. It could take them a while to get out there, depending on what they're doing.
Right.
So I think this cuts that down a lot, helps the diner and helps the staff. And they're testing it for the next couple of months. But I think it's a good thing. I mean, hopefully it takes and it gets expanded.
There's how many different menus? Just gluten or gluten? And is there a separate one for dairy free or what?
I believe that is how it works.
Okay.
I have not seen any of the other ones. I know they're allergy friendly. I don't know how many different ones there are. The ones that are on Sarah's site, for example, are specifically gluten free.
Right.
And you know, the restaurant will have other menus, for example. I can only guess that like there may be a peanut one, there may be a dairy-free one, you know, that kind of stuff. Like real major ones, I would assume that there are specific menus, but there certainly is one for gluten-free.
The first thing that jumps in my mind is that what you were talking about, which is this does free up the chefs, because if I'm not mistaken, and I have no allergies, and I can't remember ever going down there with somebody who does, but I believe I've been told that if you mention any of these things, you can't even order until you wait for the chef to come out.
Correct.
And talk to you, because they don't want to run any liability. And from what I also understand, again, I don't work on the line in these kitchens, not many of the restaurants have what we would call an executive chef, which is basically a chef that sort of oversees what's happening, cooks some of the signature dishes, but isn't always cooking. So there isn't always somebody available to just drop everything on the line and come out and talk to a guest. And I know, because I've seen that happen even on the cruises and things like that. So this definitely will streamline that. I mean, I would imagine for some people in some restaurants, you could be waiting there for 15 minutes or so before you can even order. And everybody knows that in Disney restaurants, what they want you to do is get the heck out of there as fast as they possibly can.
Exactly. You'll notice the list I gave you, about half of them are counter service.
Right.
Which, you know, is even a bigger problem.
Yeah, seriously. can't be holding up that line.
Yeah, exactly. For that reason, I mean, you go up there, and if you're at Pecos Bill's at 12:30, and there's 30 people behind you, and then you get up there and say, you know, by the way, I'm gluten-free, and now everybody's got to wait for you, the guy to come out and say, okay, this is what we could do for you. What do you think? Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I like this a lot better.
Yeah, I bet Sarah's jumping up and down. Mike, what was Sarah's website again? Wouldn't want to mention her and not give her a plug. Yeah, gluten-free, dairy-free, WDW.com.
There you go. I've just found it now, yeah. Gluten-free, dairy-free, WDW.com.
So if you are if you have those,
podcast, by the way.
Yeah, if you have any of those issues and you're a fan of Disney, go. That's the place to go. She really covers it in depth, believe me. It's really quite something else. What's next?
All right, Dave. One of your favorite topics, and that is Frozen. Disney announced a few things. One we will separate from the others. Okay. But let's talk first about Hollywood Studios, where it has been a Frozen Summer Fun Live, actually, or whatever you want to call it. Whatever you want to call it. Some of the things are leaving as of September 28th.
And that
includes the little parade. That includes the very good fireworks. And it also includes the ice skating rink. However, staying for indefinitely, according to Tom Staggs, the Frozen Sing-Along Celebration, which will continue to play at the Premier Theater on the Streets of America, Wandering Oaken's merchandise location, and the Snow Play Area, which was the studio over by like the old Prince Caspian thing and Toy Story Mania, not far from there. But that's actually being moved to the old American Film Institute Showcase, and that's where they will have Frozen merchandise and the snow, you know, where they make real snow and you can play in it. So those two things are actually sticking around.
Okay.
Now, at the Magic Kingdom, where we have, of course, Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party, well, Cinderella's Holiday Wish will now be a Frozen lighting ceremony where Queen Elsa will use her powers to turn the castle into an ice castle. And, of course, the characters will be in the Christmas parade and all that kind of stuff. But for the most part, they're screwing around with wishes or holiday wishes over at the Magic Kingdom.
Okay. So far, none of these things affect me. I don't go to the Hollywood studios, and I'm not really, hold your ears, folks, a fan of wishes.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before. Wishes is not like a destination for me. I make sure I see illuminations, but that's the only one that I really make sure I usually watch it a couple of times every trip. I think we watched it two or three times last trip.
No, I haven't watched it in years.
No, Illuminations.
Illuminations I watch at least once. Yeah, a couple times a year. Yeah,
right.
A couple times a trip, I mean.
Correct. Wishes, I don't think we saw.
I haven't seen it in years. Probably 5 years since last time I saw Wishes.
It's pretty good. Well, I saw the Hollowishes at the Halloween party last October. That was terrific. But yeah, Wishes is not...
This Frozen thing, though, Mike, this is just for the party?
I believe it is. It's for the Once Upon a Christmas Parade, and it's for the Cinderella's Holiday Wish, the castle lighting ceremony. I think that might be every day.
Okay. I enjoy it, folks.
I'm not sure. I never really go there for Christmas, so I can't really tell you.
In lieu of the rest of what you're going to talk to in the world news section, I will say that if they want to flood these two particular parks with this movie, all power to them. That is exactly what these parks should do, especially the studios. I have no problem with it. So, I mean, as much as I think it may be a little silly and done on the cheap and all this kind of stuff, whatever. Well, just like everything was Stitch for a couple of years, then was something else for a couple of years. It's Frozen now for a couple of years till people are sick of that. So it is what it is. It's not, it doesn't affect me. So,
yeah, I mean, I think we talked about this in one of the last two shows when we were talking about the new stuff or stuff.
Right.
I actually really kind of liked the Frozen stuff that they did for the most part. There were some things that kind of fell flat, but generally speaking, I thought they did a pretty decent job, especially for just a summer event. And that's what it was really billed as. We're doing this summer event, you know, whatever. It's going to last until September, whatever. You know, the sing-along was good, and the fireworks were really particularly good. Some of the other stuff was not so great, but it was fine.
Right.
And if they just stopped right there.
Well, they're not going
to. We would have been fine.
They're not going to.
But instead, they took the next step. And the rumors that we heard for the last month or so, I guess, were confirmed over the weekend, Dave, or actually Friday on the, was it Take Out the Garbage Day or whatever they call it in the news?
Yeah, the White House refers to Friday afternoon as the trash day. Basically, any story that they don't want people to read about, they release to the press at about 4 or 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon because nobody reads the paper until Sunday. And their hope is that by the time Sunday comes around, the press would have been sick of whatever this was that they didn't want them to read and wouldn't print it again. So that, folks, is the context for what Mike is about to explain to you.
So the Disney Parks blog announced that Maelstrom is going bye-bye and, you know, Frozen Let It Go Strom is coming in its place.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means either. But essentially, they
no, but I really don't know what that means.
They're taking out Maelstrom. Everything that you enjoyed in the past or disliked in the past is completely being changed to capture the music and moments, as Mr. Stags put it, of the Frozen. So, what we have now is an attraction dedicated to a pretend country in World Showcase that is supposed to be themed after a World's Fair, or a permanent World's Fair. Mm-hmm. I have said this ad nauseum, and this has caused quite a bit of stir, as you can imagine, on the social networks. I have said ad nauseum, I am not critical of Disney for doing anything to Maelstrom. If they told me today Maelstrom is going bye-bye and we're replacing it with something else, I would probably be a little upset because I do like Maelstrom, but I would say, all right, let's see what we do. But as long as it has to do with Norway, Norway is a, as far as I know, a real country. Arendelle, as far as I know, is not, and they're not the same thing. People who are pro this talk about how, you know, Epcot needs something else. It needs something for kids in World Showcase. It needs another attraction to take pressure off Soarin' and Test Track. And I actually agree with that. Epcot needs something else. But they should not sacrifice theming, proper placement, all of that. You know, the aesthetic of the area to shoehorn in characters that don't belong. I could point to the example of the Nemo, the Living Seas, which was originally an attraction show to show you how, you know, the seas are important and how technology is being used to explore the seas. And it's, you know, we've been in on the bottom of the seafloor less than we've been on the surface of the moon, you know, all that kind of stuff. We know what it is. And they changed that to shoehorn in Nemo. And obviously they thought it was going to be a huge blockbuster because they built this massive queue that now takes you about 10 minutes to, you know, go through the ins and outs of it to get to the line that does not exist. This is a huge mistake, and it's at the expense of one of the best parts of Walt Disney World, World Showcase. One of the ones that have – one of the few things along with, you know, most of Animal Kingdom and parts of Magic Kingdom – that have not suffered from, you know, shoehorning in things that don't belong and, you know, getting away from the real theme of the place. There has been a lot of backlash, I think, from Disney on this. But before we get to that, Dave, what are your thoughts on what I just said?
Oh, God. I mean, there's so many. First of all, I'm surprised that we agree in the basic premise, which is that I'm not married to Maelstrom. I mean, Maelstrom was a nice ride.
It's cool.
I enjoyed it. I thought some of the effects and stuff in it were really neat. Certainly the beginning of it, the boats are gorgeous. I mean, there was some stuff about it that was really cool, but it's short and it's not all that great. Yeah, and there was a whole, you know, second half of the experience, the film that they've just been ignoring for 15 years. So, I mean, there's, you know, there's, it had its problems, and I'm surprised to say that we agree in that. I thought you would have been a I love this ride, don't make it go away kind of camp. But I agree with you totally. If they told me they're going to put a whole new ride, gut it out, do something completely different for Norway, I would be right there with you. I agree with you and totally on that. You know, anybody who thinks that this is two of us, you know, doing a Mr. Toad's Wild Ride here, whining about something that we love going away, that's not it. And I've never really been like that for attractions.
Me neither, really.
Right. I mean, I've always liked to see something new come in, and a lot of great rides in the past have gone away. The unfortunate thing is that in Epcot, a lot of great rides of the past have gone away in favor of rides that aren't any better. In fact, they're usually a lot worse. And the thing that fascinates me so much about this ridiculous decision is, and it is nothing short of that, is besides how it doesn't fit, and Mike is 100% correct in that, it's, I mean, the exasperation I feel of, please, just one place in this park can we have. I think about the cruise lines. When you go on a cruise ship, people always say to me, oh, you went on a Disney ship. Oh, my God, there must be kids screaming everywhere. You know, especially before I had children and none of my friends had children. They all felt that way. And I said, no, actually, the great thing about Disney Cruise is that they have nice separate areas for everybody, and they really do a good job of making the person who doesn't have the kids feel right at home in the spots that aren't for kids. And why can't there be just this one area, this one little ring around the lake that, you know, one half of one fourth of the, you know, it's literally one eighth of the area available for guests. Why can't that be a place that doesn't have stuff like this? Why do I have to fight lines of kids running to this stupid attraction for the first couple of years? Just for what purpose? When I mentioned this thing, you know, and said how stupid this was, a lot of people said to me, oh, it's great to have something there for kids. My response is, first of all, your kids aren't always going to be kids. Okay, and in 10 years, they're going to want a place that isn't for kids. And if you take that away, World Showcase is all that's left. I mean, the World Showcase and the Animal Kingdom are really the only two places. Now you're just systematically chipping away at that. So Mike's 100% right in all that stuff. The part that fascinates me the most is if you look at all of the things that need attention desperately, mm-hmm. right? And we can name them. Ellen's Energy Adventure could just be gone tomorrow. They have an entire pavilion that they don't even use anymore in Future World. They put hundreds of millions of dollars into Mission Space, which could be considered nothing but a failure. They have mm-hmm. they have the Figment that is desperately in need of something. If you really needed to do something like this, why didn't you improve something that really needs it, or at least give attention to something that really needs it? Maelstrom doesn't need it. But
no.
The real fact of the matter is that this has nothing to do with that. This has to do with we want to have an area where the parents are going, where they're going to spend money on their kid, where they're going to put plush, you know, throw some plush out there. And there's probably an issue with the Norwegian, you know, tourist board, and that's the reason why it's done here. I mean, that's the sole reason why it's being done here.
I mean, it's so Disney puts on this BS, and the parks blog post that Tom Staggs write or whoever wrote it for him starts off with this whole Walt Disney Club. Oh, you know, it all
okay.
It just makes you want to throw up.
He writes, when Walt Disney promised that Disneyland would never be completed so long as there imagination left in the world, the famous quote that Walt says, before I read anything about this, I read that sentence and honestly, I said, you, Tom Staggs, in no uncertain terms, because that is such an intellectually dishonest thing to say, and you are writing this. Who's reading this? People who know who Walt is, you stupid ass. It's not, these aren't a bunch of morons who've never been to a Disney park and don't know anything about it. We know the quote. You know, and then you're
so ridiculous.
And then you're going on with stuff like that. And I didn't even have to read anymore because I knew what that was. That was the setup for a whole pile of turd getting dumped right on our heads.
People don't understand that he's insulting your intelligence.
Oh, it's
he's insulting
sick.
You.
It's sick.
That's what he's doing.
It's absolutely sick. Because he's taking the World Showcase is actually an idea of Walt's. This isn't something we're not, you know, he's taking an idea of Walt's and they're completely going against that idea. And then he's trying to tell me that Walt would have approved it because, oh, Disneyland never goes, he said this thing. I mean, do I really need to come up with the 20 other quotes about the World Showcase? I mean, about about what he had planned there for Epcot? I mean, it's insulting. It's stupid.
It's stupid and insulting. And, I mean, it's so ridiculous to put in a fake cartoon country. And again, I am not against Frozen. I am not. It's not my favorite. But if you think, Mr. Staggs, that this is a linchpin for your company for years to come, that this is a franchise, then frickin' treat it like one. Don't shove it into Maelstrom to do it cheaply. Build something legit in Magic Kingdom. Pave the Tomorrowland Speedway and make Arendelle an expansion of Fantasyland. Nice. Pave Lights Motor Action and build the castle with the sing-along song, you know, a nice theater for the sing-along and a restaurant and a dark ride. Don't do it cheap. And that's exactly what this is. They've decided this is the cheapest way, not the best way, to get Frozen into the parks. The cheapest way to get Frozen into the parks. And it's ridiculous. It's so short-sighted. You're doing it. It's Nemo all over again. They are shoving in it where it doesn't belong. It belongs in the Animal Kingdom where they built like a nice theater production and really thought about it. And well, it's not my favorite, but people love it, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
But the Nemo with the seas and friends is stupid. And they thought it was going to be a smash hit because all they did was took something about the future. They just shoved a couple of fish cartoons in there.
Right.
And they thought, hey, now we got it. I mean, this is going to – same thing with Stitch. They had the alien encounter thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it fit nicely into the Tomorrowland in terms of theming. It was perfect for theming. It was just too scary for the Magic Kingdom. Fine. So what did they do to fix that? Instead of doing a legit thing, they just kind of retooled it and put in a Stitch thing there. And people hate it.
And that's what's going to happen here.
And this whole nonsense about how Arendelle is sort of really kind of based on Norway. What does that mean? I said it in on the post that I did on our website. Does that mean if Disney gets the rights to, let's say, The Hobbit, it would be okay to retool the United Kingdom pavilion into the Shire? Because the Shire was kind of based on the English countryside. And at least in this case, Tolkien actually was from England.
Right.
Hans Christian Andersen was not from Norway. But, you know, I guess that would be okay. Also, you know, the Tatooine scenes in Star Wars were filmed in Northern Africa. Morocco is in Northern Africa, too. So why don't we put a Tatooine attraction in Morocco?
Mike, that be fits. Careful what you talk about here.
Ugh,
these things could happen.
These people are so ridiculous. And the backlash for, you know, the hashtag Save Maelstrom, which, you know, has really taken a life of its own.
Yeah, nah, I figured it would.
It started with the Disney Parks blog outright not letting any negative comment come on board. I submitted several.
So did I.
Some other people on Twitter, like Alexandra, a friend of the show, she had one up there. And I actually saw one that somehow made it through the cracks briefly, where the guy said, it was Michael from North Carolina or something like that, who said essentially, this, you know, Norway doesn't belong. And then in the second paragraph said, and stop bringing out that Walt quote every time you want to try to justify something that you know is not going to be popular. Something along those lines. And literally, I saw it, and literally within 5 minutes, it was gone.
Right.
Eventually, Disney, you know, I guess decided, hey, we're going to have to let a couple of these negative comments on because there are a couple on there now.
Right. But the only thing that I saw, correct me if I'm wrong, the only thing I saw was I'm going to miss Maelstrom type stuff.
No, there are a couple on there where, like, you know, this is not the appropriate place for it. There are a couple on there.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, after getting a lot of backlash on Facebook. And if you go on their Facebook page, if you want to see real comments as opposed to the moderator.
Yeah, they can't take they have a Facebook page that it's almost impossible to remove comments if people do that.
Right. If you look on their Facebook page where they posted this, and there's also a Disney Parks Facebook page, mm-hmm. two separate pages. There are literally thousands of negative comments. Like, you got to be kidding me with this. This is wrong, blah, blah, blah. You know, everything that we're talking about now. And Disney, of course, can't hide that like they can on their parks blog. So I wrote a post on our website, and this has been going on. You know, the hipsters have said stuff like this. We are encouraging people to write to Walt Disney World Guest Relations. And I'll give the address. P.O. Box 10,000. Lake Buena Vista, Florida, 32830, or call them at 407-827-5589. You write them, or also email them, Dave. Do you recall what their email address was by any chance?
I'll get it in just a second.
All right.
Keep going. We'll get
because
it at the
end. I'll tell you, I emailed them, and they actually called me back. Somebody from Disney Guest Relations, I guess, called me back. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to pick up the phone, and said to me, essentially, that, you know, this, you know, that they have my email, that they understand, you know, my concerns, that they're going to give my concerns to, I guess, her higher ups or whatever it was. And that, you know, this was after a lot of thought and taking into consideration guest feedback, you know, they
really
had to make this decision. So I tried calling the number that they called me on back. And it comes up to, like, you know, there's nobody that this is not a, you know, whatever phone.
Right.
I couldn't leave a message. Let me put it that way. So I emailed them and I will read you my email. I said, I received a phone message from Jenny regarding my prior email. I tried calling back for clarification. She said the decision to change Norway into a Frozen attraction was based on guest feedback. May I ask what guest feedback? Were the guests who apparently talked about this, were they informed that bringing Frozen in would mean it would go into World Showcase? Were they told an existing attraction would be removed? Or that the general theme of a permanent World's Fair at World Showcase would be discarded? Also, the fact that there are thousands of people on social media, i.e. Twitter and your own Facebook pages, that are upset about this decision, mean this decision may be altered, as guests' feedback seems to strongly suggest this is not what is wanted by the majority of the Disney fan community. The last I checked both the Disney and the Disney Parks blog Facebook pages, there were literally several thousand comments, almost all of which were of a negative nature. I do thank you for taking the time to call me.
That was nice.
And welcome another call to discuss these questions. So I would suggest you be polite with your emails. There's no reason to not be. And, of course, be polite if you actually get somebody on the phone, because these are just cast members who are not – I mean, you're not going to get Tom Staggs on the phone. Let me put it that way.
No.
But express your displeasure. Express it, because I don't anticipate, Dave, despite the thousands of people who are annoyed at this, I don't anticipate that this is going to change a cotton-bitten thing. Maelstrom is closing. I'm sure of that.
Absolutely.
But maybe at the very least, if by expressing, like so many people expressing and making this a negative thing, the next time Disney wants to change something at the World Showcase and put in, I don't know, Aladdin Dark Ride in Morocco, for example, although that would fit more than this, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
They'll maybe think, you know, do we really want to go through the Frozen thing again from Norway? I mean, at the very least, maybe we could do something like that. Maybe make them think twice the next time they just want to discard the theming of a place and just to shoehorn in characters they think are somewhat popular.
I also think it makes perfect sense to tell a company who you spend thousands of dollars on to what you think if they make a bad decision.
Right.
You know,
right.
There are thousands of people to email. Mike is now getting into my world of the, which I started with Save Off Kilter.
I want to tell you, babe, before you get the email address, I do feel bad for you and the Off Kilter people, because I have a feeling that has really kind of fallen by the wayside. Is anybody talking about Off Kilter anymore?
Well,
I know you've been trying for it, but.
Well, I mean, there is a group of, you know, there's a Facebook group with 2,500 people on it.
All right, good for them.
There is petitions, multiple sites with well over 1,000 signatures on each one of these petitions. People are calling. People are, you know, if you are to believe what they write on these things, and I have no reason not to, they're calling, they're mailing, you know, they're doing all these kind of things. I've called, I've emailed, I got back. You know, they have a standard response that they were sending to the off-kilter people, certainly for the first couple of days. They just sort of had a, you know, a form letter that they sent this, you know, we're looking to freshen things up. Whatever nonsensical expression they used. But, you know, I understand that's what it is. But this is what kind of what we started going through and coming up with all these names and addresses and you know, and all this kind of stuff. For those of you who, you know, are looking for an email, I would say it's www.guest.communications@disneyworld.com.
That's exactly the one I used. You mentioned it.
Okay, that is the one that gets you to what is called guest communications. Mike, can if you have Jenny's, do you have her phone number? She is.
No.
She works in what's called the guest experiences department.
Okay.
Let me see if I have her phone number here. Hold on. I know that I have lots and lots of phone numbers here. but most of them are related to entertainment. So, like Mike, I think you mentioned the 5589. Okay, Jenny
yes.
is a person who works at Guest Experiences Services. Her number, just to repeat, is 407-827-5589. She is an extremely nice person who is flooded with nothing but negativity thanks to the decisions of morons like Tom Staggs. She doesn't appear to be a moron like Tom Staggs, but she is tasked with kind of cataloging these complaints and sending them along.
She's had a busy week.
She's had a very busy week.
Busy couple of weeks, actually.
Yeah, busy couple of weeks. So she's the person I'd write. Any other person can be easily written to. You can write snail mail to Tom Staggs at 500 South Buena Vista Street, Burbank, California, 91521. I don't know if he'll ever read the letter, but somebody in his office will. There's Walt Disney World Guest Communications. That's P.O. Box 10040, Lake Buena Vista, Florida. You can look all that stuff up. That stuff's easy to find. But Jenny is the person to call because she actually takes these things. Now, I don't want to flood this poor woman with calls, but that's not really our fault.
What's her phone number again, Dave?
Jenny's number is 407-827-5589.
Okay.
And she is in Guest Experiences Services. And if you are like me and also want to help with saving off kilter, I would suggest you call the GM of Epcot Entertainment Operations. His name is Jack, and he can be found at 407-560-6071. Go to Facebook and type in Save Off Kilter, and you'll find the group with 2,500 people. So, yes, there's a lot of negativity. I don't want to get too far off on the off kilter thing. I don't even know where to begin.
I'm just so annoyed.
I mean, it is incredibly annoying. It's more annoying. It's disappointing. And even more than that, it's one of these things where, you know, the reason it's just about 10 years ago, there was a guy. What was his name? Kevin Yee. Started writing a column on Mike's Chat called something like Declining by Degrees or something like this. And what Kevin would do is he'd go around and he'd take pictures of bird poop on a park bench or a chip paint in a, you know, and building nobody sees and stuff like that. And the point that he was trying to make is that things just weren't as good as they used to be. I don't think Kevin could ever have imagined where we would be now. You know, which is papering over cracks and then creating giant chasms instead. And that's what what's happening now. I mean, they have done so much to degrade Epcot over the last 15 years. I don't know how much more they can do. I mean,
if you think about it, everything they've done, and we talked about this, I think, either the last episode or the one before that, I guess with the off-kilter, has not been positive.
No.
And even here, I mean, people talk about how Epcot needs more things to do, more rides and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I agree with you.
I don't.
Then give us a new – well, I do. I mean, I think it could use a couple of other things, not necessarily in World Showcase. Okay. I think that's more of, you know, we've talked about this, it's more of a laid back kind of thing. And I don't really think, maybe a couple of rides here and there, but no e-tickets, nothing major. This maybe would be.
Right.
But it could use, I mean, certainly Future World needs some stuff, needs some help anyway. They need to take the pressure off Test Track and Soarin'. But what they're doing is they're not giving you a new ride. They're just sort of editing the one that they have. Maybe make it a little bit more popular to the girl, you know, the young, you know, younger crowd. But they're not adding things to do. It's not addition. It's just editing. And there's other things they could. I mean, like, I'm not against, and maybe you are, I'm not against, theoretically, even cartoon characters being in World Showcase. If they would have done, and you know, you hear about the Ratatouille ride in Disneyland Paris, you know, being a trackless system and it might be kind of cool or whatnot.
Right.
If they said, all right, we're putting that in the France pavilion, I'm not sure if I'd be a huge fan of it, but I'd be, okay, that's fine. I mean, at least it takes place in France. It has to do, it fits aesthetically into the French pavilion, that's for sure. I mean, the movie Ratatouille looks like it was filmed at the Epcot pavilion in some ways.
Right.
And it, you know, it deals with the culture of cuisine in Paris, which is, of course, very, very French. I mean, it fits.
It's fine.
And you could do other things. You know, there are other characters and stuff that clearly fit within the confines of that particular pavilion. But this doesn't, it's, Arendelle is not Norway. I don't know how else to say it.
I used to think that characters didn't belong in Epcot, and I still don't really like it. I don't like the meet and greets and stuff that are there. I think it's kind of silly.
It's okay.
But it's not a big deal. But the Three Caballeros kind of changed my mind in that you could use characters in a positive way to introduce these countries, as long as you do it like that and actually do introduce the culture of the country or the, you know, the aesthetics of the country.
I can tell you on that thought, if they would have announced, listen, we're changing Maelstrom and it is going to be Anna and Elsa give you a tour of Norway, I would be like, well, that sounds kind of stupid, but let's see.
But me too. That's what I honestly thought was going to happen.
We talked about this many times.
Yeah.
That even if you don't really care about the movie all that much, if you build something interesting, I don't understand.
No, Disney, you're right.
Disney sees what Universal does with the Harry Potter stuff and the, like,
and
the
this
Simpsons
is their
area.
Response.
And they say, all right, you got Harry Potter? Hell, we got Frozen. That's just as big. It's going to be a huge thing. Then treat it like it.
Yeah.
Instead of just shoving it where they can with a sing-along.
Right.
I mean, I get the sing-along. I'm fine with that. But to do this to Maelstrom and just cheapen the whole process is just stupid, and they don't learn from their mistakes.
And that's the point, Mike, I'm trying to make, is that, you know, Disney recognizes that this is a big film. It's a hit. It's not a huge film that's going to be a mover and shaker for them for years to come. That's why they're not doing what you're saying. That's why they're not building a huge Arendelle like they're going to do for Avatar. Now, I know people don't like me to say that, but Avatar was a bigger film. And that's why they're doing it for Avatar, and they're doing this for Frozen.
Sure,
so,
Avatar's,
I mean,
a bigger film.
Avatar's a much bigger film, but that's how you know that Disney recognizes that. So when you see this, what makes it so exasperating, is that we know that Disney recognizes that this isn't a big deal, so then why ruin something that is a success for them in the park? Why ruin the story behind World Showcase? Why take that stuff away for something that you obviously recognize as not being worthy of your effort and worthy of your creativity and your money? So there's that. Have we beat that enough?
We are an Animal Kingdom podcast, right?
We are. Maybe I'll edit some of that down. I'm certainly going to have to put in a few bleeps.
That's it. I don't feel like talking about it anymore.
All right.
Write them, email them, call them.
Yep.
Make your voice heard.
And we are going to take a short break. Be back in a few minutes on Radio Harambe.
Yayo, Africa. Wasa, 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 wasa lele.
Wasa lele.
Yayo, Africa.
Wasa lele.
Wasa, 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 wasa lele.
And welcome Welcome back to Radio Harambe. I am I'm Dave, joined by Safari Mike. It is time for our feature segment. And this one, we're going to talk about something that Mike and I both got a chance to experience this last trip, which was only a couple weeks ago. And it is the Sunrise Safari Tour, which is slated to be axed at the end of the year. So we wanted to give our review of this just in case anybody's down there before the end of this calendar year and has a chance or is wondering whether or not they should experience it. The tour was once reserved as a perk for concierge-level guests at the Animal Kingdom Lodge that has since turned into a sort of perk, as much as $75 as a perk, but as much, you know, something made exclusive for DVC members as well as concierge-level guests at Animal Kingdom Lodge or Kidani Village. The Sunrise Safari is a special tour of just the Kilimanjaro Safari attraction. How I would put it is, instead of your normal sort of, what I think is like 18 minutes or something, 18-minute ride, or how I forget the ride length, but instead of your kind of 20-minute ride of the Kilimanjaro Safaris, your tour takes more around an hour.
Right, about that, yeah.
Yeah, and at the end, you get a chance to have breakfast. Before we talk specific about all of those things, I just wanted to mention straight off the bat that it is for ages 3 and up. Like I said, there's a restriction. If you're not staying at one of the two Animal Kingdom lodges, you really can't go. You got to be a DVC guest or a concierge level guest. Yeah, I know. But you can massage it, especially if they have openings. At least that was our experience, or that was
right. I mean, just not to divulge, but I mean, not to divert you too much, but we had an issue with one of the days we were there at Kidani, and then they were willing to book us for when we were actually at Port Orleans French Quarter. Right. Although eventually you decided to come and we added another day to Kidani. So we actually turned out to be at Kidani that day.
Right. Right.
But, they were willing to do it for us because they had all booked up while we were actually there.
Right. So give anything a shot. But I would imagine you're probably gonna have to be staying in the lodge at some point on your trip. Price is, I believe, $75, at least the last time I looked it was. $75 for 10 and up, $40 for ages 3 to 10.
That's what it says.
Yep, nobody under 3 can go. It is listed as a duration of 2 hours. I believe it runs only on Thursdays and Sundays. Mm-hmm. You meet in most cases at the concierge lounge, although that kind of can change depending on, you know, whether or not there's extra magic hours and whether or not they got to get people out the door pretty quickly, which is something that we experienced as well.
Right.
So, Mike, let's talk about it. Our experience doing it. The first thing that was weird was that we got this weird letter that none of us saw. That we were actually supposed to be there half an hour before they told us to.
Right. And I think that's because they switched extra magic hours on us about a couple weeks before we went down there, and they moved the magic hours in the morning from Monday to Sunday. So now one of the extra magic hours in the morning for Animal Kingdom is Sunday. So they're asking people, I think they're starting it off earlier than they were on the Thursday ones,
right?
Because of that,
right? So be on the lookout for a letter. They don't stick it under your door; they put it on your table that you have there. So if you got a lot of junk on that table, you may just look past it. We both happen to do the same thing. Then we rushed our way over.
Actually, I never got the letter in my room.
Oh, really? All right. So we rushed our way over to Jumbo House from Kidani Village, and the bus was leaving as we were coming in. That was a little disconcerting, but we managed to make the bus. And from there, they drive you on the bus into the park backstage to where the Kilimanjaro Safari trucks are parked and every night.
Right. So they drive you through the back. You see a lot of the workers walking around in their costumes, and then you go through the lot that has literally, what would you say, Dave, 40 Kilimanjaro Safari trucks, maybe more. Just park there in a parking lot as if, you know, it was the mall.
Right. All perfectly lined up with each other. And then you walk from that parking lot just across the street to the entrance. That's if you go into Kilimanjaro Safaris, you see actually the entrance on your left.
Correct. And you do see a couple of other things while you're driving in, Dave, before you move on to parking. Right. You do see, you get a pretty good look at the Avatar construction. You go right right around that. So you see kind of over the wall a little bit as to where, you know how much stuff has actually been plowed over and stuff like that.
Right.
You also see Pride Rock, which is the cast member cafeteria there at Animal Kingdom. Which also has, I think, did they tell us that it has some sort of library for cast members who can go in and see any movie they want to see and read any kind of stuff about Disney that they want to read, and sort of as an informational library for them.
Probably tells you how Frozen is the greatest film of all time. Yeah, you see that. That is about like when you're going backstage along the road that leads you to that you haven't really gotten to any of the animal barns yet. From that point. So you get off and you go on stage, and even though you're at the parking lot for the trucks, you don't actually board the truck there. You go through the regular queue for Kilimanjaro. I think we went through the fast pass queue, right?
Yeah. So what you do is you walk through sort of along the kind of a side entrance to get into Harambe from, I guess you're, past between Kusafiri and the Kilimanjaro Safari queue. Right. Is where you walk in. And by the way, they tell you not to take any photographs while you're driving in or walking through this offstage area. What was that?
I don't remember them telling me that.
They did say that. I did not hear that. But
I didn't either.
I was starting to take some photos of the Kilimanjaro Safari trucks, and Brooke had told me that, they told you not to take photos.
Okay.
So I quickly stopped doing that.
Well, they should have said it louder. That's not on me. That's not on you either, Mike, so don't worry about it.
And I'm pretty sure I deleted those photos.
I didn't.
Pretty sure.
I want to make one mention before we go too far into it. This actually, the people you have a tour guide. You have somebody who you meet at the Animal Kingdom Lodge.
You actually get two, but go ahead.
Yeah, who is an animal care specialist or person. And these are people who work at the lodge. These aren't people that work at Kilimanjaro Safaris. So the good part about that is that they don't really have too much of a worry about telling you things that go on behind stage.
Right.
Because they're not all that. Now, the bad thing is Mike and I mentioned when we talked about how the thing that this tour was going away, that may play a part of it. They were, take so much coordination between all the different parts of the park and all the different offices. But it was really cool to have that. So you meet your tour guide at the Animal Kingdom Lodge.
Right. And there are two of them. Two buses. So it's two bus fulls of people.
Right.
And the bus you're in has the tour guide who's going to talk to you as you're, driving into the park and then walking along. But it's also the same tour guide who's going to be on your car, on your safari truck.
Right.
So the same group of people who are in the bus are going to be on the safari truck numbers 1 or 2.
So the truck driver, like you would normally get, is not your narrator. It's not conducting the tour. It's a separate person, an animal care specialist who's doing it.
Doing the tour. The truck driver is a Kilimanjaro Safari truck driver, though.
Oh, in full regalia and all.
Right. Somebody who will then, I guess, once this is over, start doing the regular thing afterwards.
Right. And they talk and offer some information as well as you go on. So you go and you board the truck. And you basically go through, if anybody who is a photos person who likes to take pictures on Kilimanjaro Safari, of which I am obviously one, this is Shangri-La. Because you go through and literally stop for a couple of minutes in each of the different areas.
Right. You do this in the Wild Africa Trek at parts, a lot less though. I mean, the same amount of time, but you only stop once or twice where they'll stop the truck and talk to you and give you like a little thing. But that's because there are other Kilimanjaro Safari trucks going along. So there's a couple different spots where those trucks can pull off to the side. And the guy can give you, or the girl can give you a talk about the, there's one by the elephants. There's also one by the cheetahs. Here, there's nobody else on the savannah except for the two trucks for this thing. So they stop, dead stop on the road and do their bit.
And this is first thing in the morning. So most of, obviously from the name, most of the animals are sort of just coming on to their, coming into their habitats.
Mm-hmm.
So Mike, talk a little bit about the actual tour going through it itself. Like we said, I mean, that's pretty much the whole description. It's a slower version, a much slower version of Kilimanjaro
right.
safaris. I think our particular tour was, to me, amazing, but also a little disappointing.
You're because of the animals?
Yeah, would you say that?
Yes, because there were a lot of animals that were not on stage, for lack of a better term yet. There were no elephants. There were no lions. There were no cheetahs. There were no black rhinos, if my memory serves me. Anything else we're missing, Dave, that weren't out? Those are the big ones.
Were lions there?
Lions. No, did I say
lions? You said lions. Yep. Okay, so you said cheetahs, lions, elephants. Yeah.
And the black rhinos, I'm pretty sure, weren't out.
The black rhinos are hard to see anyway, but yeah.
That's true. The big ones, though, were the lions and the elephants, I think.
Yeah, not on stage at all.
Showstoppers. And I had talked to one of the tour guides afterwards, and I said, is that typical? And they said, no, it really, it's up sort of up to the whim of the animal keepers at you know, in that particular thing, as to whether or not, you know, they get around to getting the animals out in time for the sunrise safari. And therein lies the part of the problem we were talking about before. The animal kingdom keepers at the, who are, you know, taking care of the lions and elephants could care less about this sunrise safari.
Right.
They don't care. In fact, I think they hate it because, you know, twice a week they had got to get up early
right.
and get these animals out. So, you know, they're not going to rush to get them out because they just seriously, they don't care. It has nothing to do with their operations at all. It has nothing to do with them. It's an Animal Kingdom Lodge run event. So, you know, you're sort of up to the whims of the particular keepers as to what's going to be out. So on another trip, maybe the lions would be out, but, you know, the okapi are not out, or,
right.
you know, there's no giraffes yet, or, you know, whatever it is.
I think we also got a little unlucky because I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the day before there was a pretty rough storm that came
That's
through
true.
There. So there were some trees down and limbs down, and I think they were maybe even taking some animals off, keeping some animals off exhibit while they were repairing that. I don't think that had anything to do with the elephants, for sure.
Or the lions.
But I think it did have something to do with the perhaps the black rhino or
perhaps
or the okapi.
They did. We could see, and they were, you know, they pointed out where I guess a major storm had gone through the Animal Kingdom late in the afternoon the day before, knocked down several big trees.
Right.
And not just like little things. I mean, there was a big one over by where the Wild Africa Trek, that area is where you can eat
right.
and you overlook the main savanna. There was a doozy down there.
And we saw some stuff in Pangani too, I believe, or maybe it was Maharaja. There was some you know, residual stuff there as well.
Yeah, there was. I don't remember which one it was. But anyways, but you are absolutely correct. So that might have contributed to some of that to some degree.
But they did pretty much tell us that...
They did.
The real culprit here is the fact that Disney cannot coordinate this with the different groups. I wonder if there's a Tom Staggs quote from Walt about his company not being able to coordinate the different departments together to run such a wonderful event, because it really is great.
It's great, yeah.
And if that's the reason it's going away, I mean, could you think of a worse reason than that? But that's what's happening. So you do the entire safari,
mm-hmm.
And then you exit in your normal spot?
Correct. That's correct.
And you walk through Harambe.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, it's open.
I guess it was open at this point. Yep. Correct.
When you first came in, it was closed. So I took some pictures of Harambe mm-hmm. with no people in it, which is nice. And then we head to Pete Safari.
Yes, the mecca of cuisine at Animal Kingdom. Pete
Who
Safari.
Knew? Who knew?
Who knew?
And then you sit down in Pete Safari. And mm-hmm. You get the very back room.
Right, and they close it off.
It's closed off. It's just.
I imagine on Thursdays they might not be. They might not have to do that, because Thursdays the park opens at 9, and I don't think this is. I mean, I think the safari's over, and you're probably done with breakfast before 9. So
maybe, yeah.
Or right around then.
It
ends right around what time the park opens. But go ahead.
I'm sure they still use that same room anyway. But you go into the very back room, and your guides then introduce the chef,
mm-hmm, correct.
Who basically explains to you your meal and what you're going to have, the different things that are offered for you.
Right. It's a buffet.
Right. It's a buffet. It has an omelet station, has and some other – what other – I mean, the banana French toast sticks out in my mind, but what else?
Yeah. What else do you remember? They had fruit. They had biscuits and gravy, I believe.
They had some spicy stuff too, like
yeah, they did.
You know, like African spice stuff.
Did they have a sweet potato casserole kind of too?
Something, yeah, I was gonna say something like that, and some like potatoes things, spiced potato things.
Yes,
stuff
it
like
was
that.
All, and they had the typical pastry stuff too, the typical mediocre Disney pastry breakfast stuff.
Right, gotta have that.
And cereals and things like that.
Mickey waffles. You know?
Right, and Mickey waffles, correct. They had Mickey waffles, although with that banana French cinnamon French toast, there's no reason to get Mickey waffles.
No.
And it was very good.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it's. I mean, if this was a buffet breakfast that, you know, Disney was offering in the park, it would do very well. I mean, even if they just took some of those items, like the banana French toast kind of thing, and made that a Pizzafari breakfast item, I think it would be very popular. It's quite good.
Yeah, it was really good. I was blown away by how good it was, to be honest with you. I wasn't expecting that good. I thought I was just going to get Mickey waffles. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to get the normal terrible stuff that you get in like Chef Mickey's and places like that. Which
not sure if I call that terrible, but
it's
yes,
bad. It's bad.
the mediocre stuff that you get at Chef Mickey's. Yeah, that's what I thought we were going to get.
I don't know where they get those eggs from, but it's not from chickens.
Forget the eggs for a minute, but Mickey Whoppers are good.
Yeah, some of them are okay.
But
I just don't need them every time I have breakfast, that's all. There could be a breakfast place that doesn't have Mickey waffles. I know that's a strange concept, but it is possible that we could do that.
I think contractually it might not be possible.
Might not be possible.
Might not be. But anyway, so yeah, it was quite good. You know, the food was definitely a couple notches better than I thought it was going to be. There were also a bunch of different juices, like they had a guava juice and, you know, all right, that kind of stuff that was also very good.
That was great.
It was. I think the food was better than, the you know, for example, the Tusker House breakfast.
I agree.
It's kind of on par with the, I mean, it had different stuff, but I thought the Boma buffet breakfast, I don't know if you've ever had that, Dave.
Yeah, and I would put it in there.
Yeah, it's about, you know, that level of quality, a good quality buffet breakfast. And, you know, usually they're quite expensive, and this is included in the price of the thing. So I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought of it on par with, there's a couple of great breakfast places. One of them is Captain's Grill. It was one of my favorite spaces.
Yeah, I've never done that.
Yeah, very, very good over at the Yacht Club. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of on that par, better than just your off-the-shelf stuff. So, Mike, your impressions of the Sunrise Safari and your recommendation for the people who might be able to do it before it goes away.
Oh, I would definitely do it. There's no question in my mind I would do it. I think it was well worth the price. I mean, when you think of this in relation to some of the other things that they offer, even at the Animal Kingdom, for example, the Wild Africa Trek, which I love. I love the Wild Africa Trek, but that's what, $200?
Yeah.
And you walk through the safari, part of it, and you do that cool stuff with the bridge and all that kind of stuff. I get it. And then you do a similar kind of safari. Oh, that's only half the safari because you walk through the hippos and gator stuff. You pick up in the main savannah. And then, of course, you're fed. But I don't think the food was quite as good as what was here at the breakfast. Certainly wasn't as much. It's more of a light lunch kind of thing. When you compare that for $200 and this for less than half of it, it's certainly, you know, well worth, you know, it's certainly reasonable in that context.
I would agree.
Yeah, there are other tours that are, you know, in that price range that are just not as good as, I mean, how much was the, for example, the backstage safari?
Exactly. Just what I was going to say. I would say of all the tours I've been on, and I've been on a few backstage, mm-hmm, while by design, I've been on ones at other parks as well. This is the best value for your money without exception because you get a really cool experience.
Right.
It's unique and the food that's offered to you is far better. And the price that it comes in is right in the sort of your normal tour price range.
Right,
for the tours that are not, you know, the 3-hour tours, so to speak, not the really really longer ones. There's some that are much longer,
Right.
But it is the best value of anyone I've ever been on, Animal Kingdom or anywhere else.
Because when you include the fact that they give you a high quality buffet breakfast, which you've got to you got to put in the price range, that's probably worth the value of that is about $20 at a minimum, I would think.
$25, yeah.
I mean, there's no characters involved, so it's not going to be like crazy price. But let's just say it's $20. That means the tour itself, the drive through, the 2 hour or hour and a half or whatever it was, safari itself, hour or so. It's like $50.
Right.
That's not bad at all, really. No. For that kind of thing, it's very unique. You're on the savannah by yourself. They take for a long time. You actually have an animal keeper giving you their stories about the animals, and you learn a lot. It's really very good.
Yeah, they're very engaging. They talk to you about all sorts of stuff. They'll talk all day long to you. So, yeah, it was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So I would recommend it as well. I agree 100%. Anything else you want to say before we go?
The only thing I would add is that we were talking to the people who, you know, the two keepers or, you know, animal handlers, whatever you want to call them.
Right.
And we were discussing, you know, the problem they were having and the fact that it was going bye-bye. They did intimate that they are considering some sort of alternative to this. You know, and I suspect that the alternative will be more lodge, you know, specific. Maybe there'll be a sunrise safari through the Kidani and Jumbo tour, you know, places, and then you'll get, you know, that breakfast and stuff like that. So even if they do that and they switch it over to the lodge, I still think it's worth it. It's a unique experience, even if it's in the same general price range. I don't know. They're considering options. They told us that they're considering some certain options. They did say that it's going to probably be more lodge oriented just because of this difficulties in coordinating it as you were talking about before.
Right.
So be on the lookout for something next year, perhaps, where, you know, an alternate to this, a new version of it or something.
And that's exciting too, because there's so many different species of animals now in the Animal Kingdom Lodge in both of the buildings and all the savannas they have there, that if you did something really immersive and really kind of, you know, a slow kind of close up look, that would be great. So
yeah, even if they include like a little walk through some of the backstage area where you
sure.
see where they keep
them.
Yeah,
yeah,
it would be, yeah, there's definitely room to do something like that, you know, interesting kind of thing.
Unfortunately, it means that now if you're going to want a nice paced experience on Kilimanjaro Safaris, you're going to have to pay $200 for the Wild Africa Trek.
The Wild Africa Trek, though, is great, Dave. I got to tell you.
I will eventually scrape up the $200 when somebody... maybe Disney will not listen to this podcast and decide to invite us.
And the only other thing I would add, Dave, to this is they don't bring you back to the lodge.
Right. They leave you in the park. Correct.
They leave you in the park.
Correct.
Now, if you don't have a ticket.
You have to have a ticket in order to do the tour.
You do, right?
Yeah. It says that. Park admission required. Yep.
Okay, good. Okay. I wasn't sure about that because they don't scan your magic band or anything like that.
No, they don't. But no.
But they
No,
they didn't. But they have to know. I mean, when you book whether you know what kind of pass you have.
Right. Right. Yeah, you need it. Or else you're getting a free day for
right, but
in the park.
But,
so
but you have to be advised that if you know your plan was to, you know, theoretically be brought back to the Jumbo house and then take a bus to It's not quite that easy. You are left at Pete Safari.
Sure they didn't have a handheld thing to scan the magic bands?
I'm almost positive they didn't do anything of the sort.
I'm thinking they might have been. Okay, cool. So that'll do it for us, I guess, right?
It will. Go try the sun. If you're down there, try the Sunrise Safari. I think you'll like it.
Absolutely. We both highly recommend it. And thanks for listening. Let me remind you to check out the store. Go to jumboeveryone.com. Click the store icon on the top right. You find great bracelets there that were being handmade. There's also our link to our Zazzle store where we got all sorts of t-shirts. All that stuff is going to our conservation effort and donating to our conservation partners. You can read all about that on jumboeveryone.com. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Radio Harambe. Mike's at Jumbo Everyone. You can also find links to all the other social media there as well. Please subscribe to the show. Please rate the show as well. It really helps when you do that. I think that's it. So for Safari Mike, I'm Dave McBride. Kwaharini, go well, and thank you for listening to Radio Harambe. Kwaku